the streets will somehow occupy your mind. You fight the hurt when you're alone. Seems as though reality dropped another life at your feet. Now that you face another day, it leaves you feeling like you'd like to take it home. Your eyes see things and say, no way. Feels like there's an enemy in everyone who loves you. Tell me,
do you really think that
the government cares about you?
No, they don't.
Ghetto people, who you gonna turn to next?
Who you gonna turn to?
Listen to me, I'm trying to tell y'all, yeah.
Ghetto people.
Self-respect.
Stop it,
people.
Show some love for yourself, people.
Life can take some strange turns on you. Living with the things thrown at you leaves you in the cold with a day that's not worth having. Chances are the shortfalls of greed won't ever come to feel what you need. What you really want inside can only come from you. The day will come when all of your pride leaves you standing around looking like, what am I gonna do? You have those feelings deep inside, a strange kind of sadness you can never get used to.
Ghetto people,
what are you trying to prove?
Come on, tell me, y'all.
Do you really think that
the world gives a damn about you?
Hell no, it don't.
Ghetto people,
who you gonna turn to?
Who you gonna turn to?
Listen, people, you better take a look at yourself, yeah.
Talking to my people,
but you just don't see
what you're living
at. Like you're living,
living like you're living,
caught up in the make-believe,
lost in your dreams,
yeah. Ghetto people,
stop giving up your self-respect.
Stop it, y'all.
Talking to my people, yeah.
Can take some strange turns on you. Living with the things thrown at you leaves you in the cold with a day that's not worth having. Chances on the shortfalls of greed won't ever come to feel what you need when what you really want inside can only come from you.
Motherland Media is on the air. You are listening to African Perspectives on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. African Perspectives, where we talk about the issues of our day from an African worldview, an African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak. Having been granted permission, to our ancestors whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters and friends, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. So I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is always an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who is living, and everyone who will live in the future. We have a common ancestral root. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were other cultures as well, such as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, great civilizations that were flourishing while Europe was still in the medieval or dark age. So we pour this libation to those contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, uprooted out of Africa, laying a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. They are now in North America, Central America, South America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to brothers and sisters who suffered the Holocaust of enslavement, of captivity. We do not know their names, but because of them, we are here. So we honor them in their sacrifice. We say Ashe. We pour libation to those men and women who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you'll know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a slave want to do? It wants to get free. There's over 400 recorded revolts of our people fighting on the continent, throughout the Middle Passage, and this hemisphere. We resisted. We were not slaves. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master, and we haven't and we will never submit. So we give honor and reverence to those men and women who fought. Denmark Vesey, Gabriel Prosser, Harriet Tubman, Nat Turner, and many, many others. We honor them. We respect them for always standing and fighting for the liberation of our people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good community life because we don't have good family life. Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is bad because we lack consciousness. Consciousness is more than just awareness. It's a deeper understanding of who you are culturally, historically, and the necessity to come together to produce family, which is produces good community life. So he poured his libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We say Ashe. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, I hope everything is well with you today. Hope you had a great weekend. I truly hope that you had a chance to do all the things that you wanted to do, needed to do, should do, must do, better do. And I hope the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But if it wasn't, you had to do it. If you really, truly had to do it, you did it because you knew it had to be done. So I hope that weekend was great for you. And I hope this week is even better. Brothers and sisters, this is African Perspectives, and we're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen live, brothers and sisters, truly, you can go on timeforanawakening.com and listen to previously recorded programs or blacktalkradionetwork.com. So keep abreast of what that was happening in the African world. Today's Monday, so this evening at 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern, Acres of Diamonds. After that program, it's Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. You can also view it on Facebook, 8 to 9. On Wednesdays from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness. On Thursday, Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People in the Spirit of Ujamaa, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. And of course, our summit is rapidly approaching. The 5th Annual Power Summit, March 16th and 17th. The 16th will be at the Cafe Ulu, which had a great crowd yesterday evening. There was a public discussion amongst the family, amongst brothers and sisters in the community. That's what I love about what we're going to be doing at Cafe Ulu, bringing people in, spoken word, some music, whatever. And they talked about Wakanda. Can we bring, after the movie, what next? You know, and a good crowd was there. Fortunately, didn't stay to hear it all. Had to do some things. So, but it was outstanding. And of course, the cafe is located at 2036 Sylvan Road here in Atlanta. It's open Monday through Friday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. Saturday and Sunday 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. And of course, it has coffee from Cameroon, Tanzania, Kenya, Ethiopia, Brazil, and more. Outstanding teas, a good vibe, a good atmosphere. And, of course, you can check out Cafe Ulu online. CafeUlu.com, CafeUlu.com. If you want to know more about Us Lifting Us and the Power Summit that's upcoming, go to usliftingus.com, usliftingus.com. Also, too, you can contact me. I'm a member and a board member of Us Lifting Us. Okay. So that's Us Lifting Us on Thursday evenings with hosts, a number of hosts. In fact, Sister Danana did an outstanding job of hosting the program this past Thursday. Brother Baba Kambizi, Baba Kima, Brother DJ, so forth. That's Thursday. But on Friday, if it's 8 p.m. Eastern time, it's time for an awakening, y'all. That's right. It is time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Fridays. Check them out. On Saturdays, SST, that stands for Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. Saturday afternoon, this Saturday, Dr. William Rogers will be broadcasting from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. right here on Time for an Awakening. Revive with Sister PLC, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Sunday. 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Sunday, Revive. And then Sunday evening, Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And there are more programs to come, and I look forward to it. This being Monday, next week Monday, this is just a day we're going to talk about whatever. And so please give us a call at 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832, and give us your African perspective. What's on your mind? What is happening that you want to give some information to? When I was out and about, I went to one of the malls here that is heavily attended by us, but very few businesses in the mall are us. Oh, man. But one kiosk was We Buy Black, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses. We're not only a global marketplace for American African-owned businesses, we're a movement for economic empowerment. And brother was had some toothbrush they were selling. They were just some research. I bought some stuff for pain relief just to see how that was, and some deodorant that is doesn't have a lot of perfumes and so forth, and it's much better for you, a lot of chemicals. Some other stuff that the brother had. And Lamar? But it's a good brother in here in Atlanta. But go to their website, brothers and sisters, WeBuyBlack.com, WeBuyBlack.com. And I'm going to be giving that brother some prop. And 50 years is a long time. The Provisional Government of the Republic of New Africa will have its conference in Detroit, March 29th to the April 1st in Detroit, the Republic of New Africa. And you can go to the website, bg-rna.org. pg-rna.org to check out and get more information. And I'll have my good friend, brother come in to talk about it when the time gets near, in a couple of weeks. So we'll know pretty much what to expect from the Republic of New Africa's New African Nation Day. New African Nation Day, Thursday, March 29th through April 1st in Detroit. And some of the venues I know it's going to be at. It's going to be at the Charles H. Wright Museum of American African History, and also Timbuktu Academy and Okabalon Village. Be some of the sponsors for that. And what else I got here for us? Oh, I want to do this today. Because we truly need to understand Sister Marimba Ani put this out. Umoja. This is the African Sovereignist interpretation of the Nguza Saba. Understand, dear brothers and sisters, the Nguza Saba, which is the seven principles of Kwanzaa, are to be instilled into our everyday lives. Yes, the Kwanzaa week from December 26th to January 1st is the celebration. But the principles in themselves of umoja, unity, kujichagulia, self-determination, ujima, collective responsibility, ujamaa, cooperative economics, nia, purpose, kumba, creativity, and imani, faith, should be instilled in our everyday lives. We should put this into practice. It is something that we do consciously and subconsciously because we are directed to be self-determining. We are directed to be sovereign. So the Pan-Africans, so these are the Nguza Saba from a Pan-Africanist perspective. Umoja, unity, the Pan-Africanist vision of African people throughout the world joining forces to fight for African sovereignty and to build an African world order. That wherever we are, we recognize that we are African. I said, and I'll continue to say, the most revolutionary thing that we can do at this very moment is to declare that we are an African people. We are Africans. Africa is a noun. A noun describes a person, place, or thing. Black is a color. Black is a color. We are not black. We are African. And I know there are some of us who want to use the word black because we don't like Africa. We don't like Africans. Some of us don't even want to be African-American. We just want to be American and black, black American. Because, see, those who promote the idea of black, they don't necessarily want to be white, but they don't understand by them wanting to be black and not African and not socialize with us or not identify with us as African people, because they believe that America and what happened, it changed us. We are different. We are different biologically, they believe. We're different socially and so forth. We have been, you know, made by this society in over 400. That's right, brothers and sisters. Next year will be 400 years of us being in this madness. And we really need to we really need to take a look at the dynamics and then make a declaration from that point to say, enough of this. Let's do for self. Let's be sovereign. Let's be independent. Let's be self-determining. Let's be liberated. Let's be sovereign and move from that point. Because the most important thing that we could do is to declare that we are an African people, because Africa is our home. Africa is where we are from. We are an African people. I don't want to get into the debate about all this other stuff that's out there at this moment. I just want us to focus in on this, that we are an African people. Africa is the noun. A noun describes a person, place, or thing. There's a word that may go in front of the noun, which would describe, or even after, to describe what the noun is. So if we are here in America, we are American Africans. We're not African Americans. We are American Africans. We're in Cuba, Cuban Africans. Jamaica, Jamaican Africans. Ghana, Ghanaian Africans. Nigeria, Nigerian Africans. Ethiopian Africans. You see, you get the picture? Azinian Africans. Azinia is the name of South Africa, which is still hasn't been done, because I believe that it might get done now, because we're going to talk about what happened in South Africa in a minute, which is beautiful. Oh, man. And so we're saying we are an African people. The Pan-Africanist vision for African people throughout the world is to join forces to fight for African sovereignty and to build an African world order. We have every right. We have every right, like any other people, to determine our destiny. And it should not be predicated on what happens or because of Europeans. I understand the situation the way it is, but damn it, it ain't going to always be like that. So let's prepare for the better future for us and our people. Kuji Chagaliya, self-determination. African people defining ourselves to determine our own destiny as a sovereign people. Ujima, collective responsibility. African people working together, being responsible to and for each other and accepting a common system of accountability. I am because we are, and because we are, therefore I am. We are working together. This is not an individualistic thing. This is not like I got mine, you go better go get yours. This is us lifting us, being accountable to one another, setting timelines, delegating, making sure that things are done in the order that it should be done. Ujamaa, cooperative economics. Creating economic cooperatives based on the concept of African familyhood, interdependence, interrelationships, and community and national and global African unity. Familyhood. Like, just like Ulu, we call it family-centered economics, but it's based on Ujamaa, cooperative economics, spending and pulling our money together. That was a beautiful thing yesterday to go into Cafe Ulu and see about 50 people, standing room only, to talk about Wakanda. Where do we go from here? Nia, purpose. African people sharing common goals that determine our commitments and guides our choices and decisions. This gives purpose to our lives and to our work and tells us why we were born to be African. Kumba, creativity, to think with African minds and to create from our African center. When we practice this principle, we no longer imitate non-Africans. We make our own way. The creativity of us is just, there's no limit. It's unbound. For what we can do. And just to think, even in spite of oppression and segregation, racism, denial of self, we still rise. Imani, faith. Faith not just in ourselves, to believe in the vision of African sovereignty and to have the passion and the will, the heart to bring it into existence, the will. Marcus Garvey said, up you mighty race, you can accomplish what you will. If we have the will to do it, I clearly believe in God and our ancestors, the way will be made. But we must first show that we have the will to do it. By that means that we put things into practice. We begin to do things to put us in that path to self-determination, to put us in that path to African self-governance, to put us in that path. And I mean African on the continent and African globally. Because when you look at the world, we have no friends. For all that we have given to the world, we have no friends. For what has happened to us because of European dominance, European expansion, European hegemony or hegemony, whichever word you want to use, that word means from the Caucasian perspective. What's mine is mine, and what's yours is mine. So understand that we have the opportunity. All we have to do is develop the right mind. That is a sovereign interpretation of the Nguza Saba. You know, I didn't get a chance to finish the Life Without Us as a people. So I'm going to finish it. I'm going to finish it. I'm going to start all over. I'm going to start all over and I'm going to finish this. Life Without African People. And understand, I don't use the word black. I'm adamant about that. We're not. We're Africans. And wherever we are, that's the kind of African we are. If there were some Africans in China who moved there, lived there, they're China and had children there, they're Chinese African. Okay? Japan African. Whatever. Africa is our root. Africa is our spirit. Africa is what moves us. So you can train your mind like I've trained my mind. So when I see these particular words like black, I automatically put African on it. When I see race, because there is no such thing as race. There's only one race. That is the human race, of which African people are fathers and mothers of. They're cultures. And so when I see the word, I substitute that with culture. So, because I heard someone say, says, words have meaning. Words give vision. Words give images. Words are powerful. Well, if that is the case, then when you hear the word slave, whose face do you put on that word? Exactly. So if they have that kind of power, then when you hear the word slave, you shouldn't put our face on it, because we were captives. See, that's why some words, because of the connotation of the word, it's just like in the society, they don't say punishment. The person's going to be punished for whatever wrongdoing that he or she has done. They'll say they're going to be disciplined. But discipline means that you have order, that you're disciplined. Discipline means you have self-imposed order. That's what discipline means. It doesn't mean punishment. It means that you prioritize things. You have a clear understanding of who and what you are, and you act on that. That's discipline. What do they call the studies in universities? They call them what? Disciplines. They don't call, well, some may argue that maybe the subject matter might be a little bit too tough and you feel like you're being punished, but the reality is they're called disciplines. So to me, for us, I don't give a damn about the Caucasians. For us, start to practice putting words that more correctly identify the situation. Begin to think in that way. It's very liberating, believe me. A very humorous and revealing story is told about a group of Caucasians who were fed up with American Africans, so that they joined together and wished themselves away. They pass through a deep, dark tunnel and emerge in some sort of twilight zone where there is an America without African people. At first, the Caucasian people breathe a sigh of relief. At last, they said, no more crime, drugs, violence, and welfare. All of the Africans have gone. Then suddenly, reality set in. The new America is not America at all, only a barren land. There are very few crops that have flourished because the nation was built on the captivity of a system of enslavement. There are no cities with tall skyscrapers because Alexander Mills, an American African man, invented the elevator. And without it, one would find great difficulty reaching higher floors. There are few, if any, cars because Richard Spikes, an American African man, invented the automatic gear shift. Charles Gamble, also American African, invented supercharged system for internal combustion engines. And Garrett Morgan, an American African, invented the traffic signals. He also invented the gas mask, which, of course, has a firefighter. We couldn't do the job that we do without it. It was probably the most key piece in firefighting. In fact, when you train as a firefighter, they will tell you that is your lifeline. in order for you to effectively go into a burning building or a building charged with serious amounts of toxic smoke, and for you to do your job to get to the seat of the fire or to rescue people, you got to have it. Furthermore, one would not use the rapid transit system because its procurer was the electric, the electric trolley, which was invented by Albert R. Robinson. Even if there were streets on which cars and rapid transit systems could operate, they were cluttered with paper because American African Charles Brooks invented the street sweeper. There were a few, if any, newspapers, magazines, books, because John Love invented the pencil sharpener. William Purvis invented the fountain pen, and Lee Burge invented the typewriting machine. And W.A. Love invented advanced print pressing. They were all, you guessed it, American Africans. Even if Americans could write their letters, articles, and books, they would not have been transported by mail because William Barry invented the postmarking and canceling machine. William Purvis invented the hand stamp, and Philip Downing invented the letter drop. When you drop a letter in the mail, I know there's not a lot of mailboxes on corners anymore. The post office usually only has one person at the counter in long lines. I know because that's what I do. I mail my bills. I do. I don't roll over and jump on the computer and send them off. No, I don't. I mail them. I go to the post office. I buy stamps. I put a stamp on it and send it off. I mail my bills because I want the people at the post office to have a job. There are more and more people and less jobs. What is the society and the world going to do if all of this automation takes place? In just in a few years, there will be driverless cars, driverless trucks, driverless buses, driverless trains. Just in a few years. The lawns were brown and wilted because Joseph Smith invented the lawn sprinkler and John Burr invented a lawnmower. I always think when I make a presentation, I talk about how the brother invented the... Because see, even though I'm reading this and all these inventions, a lot of these inventions were a better way to do something. That's why I don't believe that Eli Whitney invented the cotton gin, because Caucasian was just sitting on a, you know, and we were doing the work, just like John Burr. He's probably in a field with a sickle. You know what a sickle is? That's right. That's how I used to cut grass, with a sickle. A handle, long stem, and a blade perpendicular to the stem, and you would sweep across the grass. Whoosh, whoosh, whoosh. And as you cut the grass down, he's probably in that field just like, man, it's hot. Man, it's got to be a better way to do this. Bing! Man, that's it. I could take this blade, another one, kind of figure them, put them on a wheel, and there it is. Lawnmower. Figuring out a better way to do it. When they entered their homes, they found them to be poorly ventilated and poorly heated. You see, Frederick Jones invented air conditioner and Alice Parker the heating furnace. Everything that I'm saying here has been patented, so I'm just not throwing stuff. This is a good piece here because this stuff has been patented. Their homes were also dim, but of course, Lewis Latimer later invented the electric lamp. What Lewis Latimer did is put the filament in it. So even Edison had the bulb, but he had the filament to make the, so when your light lasts longer, that was him. And of course, Lewis Latimer went on to Paris and to light the streets of Paris. You know, Michael Harvey invented the lantern and Granville T. Woods invented the automatic cutoff switch. When you flick your lights off and on, Granville T. Woods was just a dynamic man. In fact, he invented the roller coaster. You want to have some fun? Roller coaster, which I love roller coasters. Unfortunately, because of this knee surgery, this knee replacement, I might not be able to fit in them. But love roller coasters. That's Granville T. Woods, of just a dynamic man. Their homes were also filthy because Thomas Stewart invented the mop and Lloyd Ray invented the dustpan. Their children, at the door, barefooted, shabby, motley, and unkempt. But what could one expect? Jan McZelliger invented the shoe lasting machine. Walter Simons invented the comb. Sarah Boone invented the ironing board. And George T. Salmon invented the clothes dryer. Finally, they were all resigned to at least have dinner in the midst of all this turmoil. But here again, the food had spoiled because another American African, John Standard, invented the refrigerator. Now, isn't that something? What would this country be like without the contributions of American Africans? Dr. King said, by the time we leave for work, millions of Americans have depended upon the inventions and the minds of American Africans. American African history includes more than just the enslavement or the captivity. It includes great leaders such as Garvey, King, Malcolm, Du Bois, Frances Cress Wellesley, Queen Mother Moore, and I could just go on. So I didn't finish that piece, though. Now I did. Oh, also an announcement. I'm going to be announcing this conference, and hopefully we'll have somebody to come on to talk more extensively about the conference, the 21st Century Survival Conference, April 14th, right here in Atlanta at the Shrine of the Black Madonna. Spiritual, cultural, and survival. The spiritual will be discussed by Ashwa Kwesi, the master teacher, and he'll deal with African history and spirituality, origin of the Bible and the Quran. Culture, Baba Mwalimu Baruti. Warrior's character. A warrior's character. What is a warrior? What is a warrior? Needs to be answered. Needs to be defined. And we may need to groom them, brothers and sisters, to be warriors. Survival, Irritated Genie of Soul Free. African Survival in the 21st Century. That is April 14th, 2018, the Survival Conference. You know, please give me a call if you want to engage in some conversation at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Let me say this. Because I said if Get Out won anything at the Oscars, I was going to talk about it. So, Jordan Peele won for original screenplay. Original screenplay means that you wrote. And it was not adapted from anything. You wrote it straight up. And he wrote Get Out. Now, I talked about Get Out a number of times. And, of course, I use Get Out as the metaphor for us to get out of here. Get out. And that's what we should do. We should get out. You know, I'm adamant about that. I like Tiffany Haddish. I love Tiffany Haddish. She reminds me of the fine sister who's ghetto. But I love her spirit. And she came out, I didn't notice because I didn't really too much watch it. I flipped back and forth. I was watching the Bucks, Milwaukee Bucks and the Philadelphia 76ers. And the Bucks were down by 20, down by 14 at various times. Came back. Finally, they had a win. But anyway, so I wouldn't really, because I could give less than a rat's ass about the Academy Awards, the Oscars, whatever. Because to me, us being mad because Oscar's so white or anything about them, my contention is glorify your own in your own way. Even more so than the NAACP Image Awards, because that's sponsored, heavily by Caucasians. That's why I applaud Brother DJ and the Black Power Awards for the last few years. And hope they continue. Hope it's better next year. Support your own. So she, Tiffany Haddish, his father is Eritrean, East African, Eritrea. And she had a dress on the what's it called, runway, although she did jump over the rope or walked over the rope to give Meryl Streep some love, I guess. In fact, she said, because I did see that part this morning, she said, you're going to be my mama. Because her, Tiffany Haddish, and Minnie Riperton's daughter, her name is escaping me right now. She was on Saturday Night Live for many years. I've only seen her play as an American African a couple of times. I know in the skits, she was dead on, you know. But also I've seen her play as a Caucasian because she looks. But, of course, her and Tiffany was, you know, they were at their American African best. Tiffany Haddish. And the dress she wore was the dress she wore as Eritrean dress, but the dress she wore to give them an award out was a dress that she had worn in the movie Girl Trip and another thing that she wore, and she wore it last night. And, of course, the dress she looks great in. But in terms of Get Out, you know, in fact, the brother that said that in the movie, he was there last night. So I saw that too. You see a lot of this stuff. You can see the whole damn thing if you want to, if you truly care to, on the internet. After the fact, of course. And maybe even during. I don't know. But, you know, to me, the movie Get Out, and I know that Jordan Peele, he said, I would go back and forth to dealing with it for a number of years before he finally, you know, made the push to have it produced and then, of course, to have it shown nationwide. And I tell you, to me, it is very clear. Now, that movie, of course, talks about the issue of organ harvesting, which has been happening to African people for decades. We've all heard of some person who was killed and their organs removed. They have done that to a number of people, particularly in other countries. They did that in India to some Africans, some dark-skinned Africans, or some dark-skinned Indians, the Dalits, the untouchables. Drug them. They don't kill them. They wake up, and they see on the side of their body where their spleen has been removed, their lungs have been, a lung has been removed, a kidney gone. And they sew them back up very, you know, they don't do the good. It's a serious tack job. So that has happened and is happening. And it will continue to happen to us as long as we are in this fragmented, divided state that we are on. As long as we keep wanting to be black, this will continue to happen. We keep denying our African self and embracing who we are and coming together to work with one another. It will continue to happen. We will continue to see these pathetic and paltry numbers. One of them I seen that since the 60s to now, the numbers for us in home ownership, I mean, all these are the same. It's almost like the status quo must be maintained, and it has been. That's why to me, to hell with those individuals who are in that top 20% of us who have wherewithal, particularly that 10% or even deeper, that other 10%. Because there's one part of the 10% of us who have, you know, a good, nice pension, maybe still a good job, a good business and so forth. They're doing fine. You know, they love America, the land of opportunity. Not equal opportunity, but there's a land of opportunity, but not equal. You know, they're, so they're doing fine. But then there's the other 10% that are doing exceedingly well. The Tyler Perrys, the of the world, the Oprahs of the world, the LeBron James. I mean, of all of the people, you know, to me, that I love people who at least attempt to give back and to do things. And LeBron is one of them. But there's so much more that these people can do, him included. But people do stuff in the name of making America look good. I don't give a damn about America looking good because it will never look good to me. Never, ever. There's not a damn thing that these Caucasians can do to make me real feel real good about America, knowing the history, knowing what they have done to us, knowing what they have done and continue to do to our minds. So, oh, also too, Kobe Bean Bryant, Dear Basketball. He won Academy Award for an animated short about basketball. He won Academy Award, Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bean Bryant. I was like, man, really? Didn't see it, but hey, whatever. But there was something that really caught my eye. And that was Atlanta Black Star. 50 years later, Kerner report on racial inequality is more prevalent and relevant and undressed than ever. This is Cecilia Smith. Let me see who Cecilia Smith is. I'll tell you right now. Cecilia Smith. It really doesn't say the sister, but she must be from the Atlanta Black Star staff. And so we'll get off into this because here it is, 50 years. 50 years is a long time, let alone 400. That's why I'm saying all of this stuff needs to be analyzed by our scholars, our historians, and then looked at and then explained to us and have it explained to us the direction we need to go from this point going forward. As African people. 400 years, hell, 50 years is a long time. All of this could have been corrected easily. But the Caucasian does not have the will, and we don't have the will to break that hold that they have, that vice grip that they have on our minds. To call the 1960s a tumultuous time in America would be a gross understatement. From the Vietnam War to the assassinations of Kennedy, Dr. King, and Robert Kennedy, it was a decade that in many ways would serve as a turning point for the nation. Yeah, right. Change was in the air as the civil rights movement finally began pushing the dial forward on injustice long ignored. But racism continued to back against each stride made. People were angry, and their rage spilled into the streets of Los Angeles, Chicago, Newark, major cities in the years 65, 66, and 67, and 68. This series of uprisings led Johnson in 67 to establish National Advisory Commission on Civil Disorders, also known as the Kerner Commission, with identifying the source of discontent and preventing it from happening again. In 68, the 11-member commission revealed its findings, coming to the bleak conclusion that American-African rage was largely the result of poverty, European-Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege, and ongoing systematic oppression. At the heart of the report, they found that our nation is moving toward two societies, one American-African and one Caucasian, separate and unequal. Perhaps the most brutally frank examination of racial strife of its time, the report also explained that segregation and poverty have created in the racial ghetto a destructive environment totally unknown to most Caucasian Americans. Making a pungent point, that what Caucasian Americans never fully understood, but what the African can never forget, is that Caucasian society is deeply implicit in the ghetto. White institutions created it. White institutions maintain it, and white society condones it. Caucasian institutions created it. Caucasian institutions maintain it, and Caucasian society condones it. Then and now. Then and now. Outlining a list of potential programs, the commission sought to undertake new initiatives and experiments that can change the system of failure and frustration that dominates the so-called ghetto and weakens our society. Armed with this information, President Johnson made a decision that would set America on a course that later years it's yet to correct. He decided to do nothing, rejecting a report that would go on to become a national bestseller. A little more than a month after it was released, The Assassination of King would spark even more riots as the cities across America went up in flames. 30 years later, the Eisenhower Foundation would observe the anniversary of the Kerner Report with an examination of their own, releasing a millennial breach as a means of identifying just how much progress has been made since then. While admitting that some strides have been made, including the election of more American African elected officials and a rising high school graduation rate, you know, y'all, sometimes I'm telling you, graduation rate is also found that over the 80s and the early 90s, the U.S. tripled the number of prison cells and simultaneously reducing housing appropriations for poor by 80%. They also revealed that in the early 1990s, one of four American African men were in prison. That's 25% of us on probation or parole by the late 1990s. One in three, 33%, young American African men were in prison, operation or control. So in the early, just in that 10-year span, in the early 1990s, 25%. And then in the late 10 years later, and of course the 1990s were Bill Clinton. That was Bill Clinton. Now, the 50th anniversary of the Kerner Commission report has reignited the discussion, with many now realizing how strong Johnson was. Excuse me, how wrong Johnson was, according to Morgan State professor Dr. Jared Bell. By the time it was published in the mainstream press today, 50 years ago, he realized that its conclusion stood against everything he himself and his political class stood for. Bell added, so he tried to squash it and ignore it and downplay it despite its very provocative conclusions. As his most famous statement said, we were headed as a nation toward two separate societies, one African, one Caucasian, separate and unequal. And that's exactly what happened, resulting in a society that, despite gains made in areas like education, still favors Caucasians over American Africans with the same educational background, one with racial income gaps that have grown and housing and voter discrimination that remains in place. According to this new study from the Economic Policy Institute, the substantial progress in educational attainment of American Africans has been accompanied by significant isolated improvements in wages, incomes, wealth, and health since 1968. But American African workers still make only 82 cents for every dollar earned by a Caucasian worker. American Africans are 2.5 times as likely to be in poverty as Caucasians, and the median Caucasian family has 10 times as much wealth has the median American African family. And that's not all. With respect to home ownership, unemployment, and incarceration, America has failed to deliver any progress for American Africans over the last 5 decades. In these areas, their situation has either failed to improve relative to Caucasian or it has worsened. It's a harsh reality, former Democratic Oklahoma Senator Fred Harris, the sole surviving member of the Kerner Commission, described as racial and ethnic inequality is a growing worse. We're resegregating our housing and schools again. There are far more people who are poor now than it was true 50 years ago. Inequality of income is worse. Harris recently served as an editor in a newly released study titled Healing Our Divided Society, Investing in America 50 Years After the Kerner Report, which echoed the same sentiment. Speaking with NPR, Harris said, I was 37 when I served on a commission. Whoever thought that 50 years later, we'd still be talking about the same thing? That's kind of sad. He's almost 90. And that is kind of sad, isn't it? It is. But it is what we have to deal with, brothers and sisters, is our situation. Give me a call at 215-490-9832. You are listening to African Perspectives. Here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us. On the other side, I want to hear from you.
This call is being recorded.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Of course, we're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. On Mondays, Acres of Diamonds is on Time for an Awakening Media from 6 to 8 p.m. After that, Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. Also, you can check them out on, it's a podcast, on YouTube or on Facebook. On Wednesday from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., it's Revive with Sister POC, Revive. On Thursdays, it's Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People in the Spirit of Ujamaa. Cooperative economics, or like we like to say, family-centered economics. Time for Awakening. It's Friday. It's 8 p.m. It's your host, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Time for an awakening. On Saturdays, Troy Wilmore, Sports Talk, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And Dr. William Rogers, Black Reality Think Tank, 4 p.m. to 6. On Sunday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. No, it is not Brother Oshie from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. It is Sister POC with Revive. On Sunday. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And this is a What's Up Monday. So, what, we got a caller? 267. Go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon, Brother Oshie. This is Brother Ralph. How are you?
Oh, brother, I'm doing fine. Hope you had a great weekend, man. How you been?
Oh, yeah. Always. Good. I try to, you know, do my best to make it a great weekend for me and those around me.
That's right.
But I'm fine, Brother Oshie. You know, I just had to call in, let you know I'm listening. I want to thank you for giving us something to listen to on a Monday morning, because
appreciate
most
it.
Of these black talk radio stations, man, they're doing is talking about Trump, and it's a disgrace.
Yeah.
You know, even the whole month of February, which is supposed to be Black History Month, you know, you just had Al Sharpton and others talk about Trump.
Yeah.
And, you know, our people are being played, Brother Oshie. And this is what I mean. Again, and they don't see it, and they get a little angry at me when I call it to their attention. I said, yeah, you see this person, Hope Hicks, step down. You see Kushner, he don't have the proper security clearance. You see this, you heard about the 13 indicted Russians. None of these people are going to be arrested.
No.
None of them.
No.
But they keep y'all entertained with this stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you feed into this nonsense, this
yeah.
so-called news, and it's nothing but garbage.
Yeah.
You know, I can see if they said they take that, you know, take them away in handcuffs. Ain't nothing going to happen to these people, Brother Oshie.
No, it's not.
You know?
It's just like I saw a piece on the national news this morning. A guy was talking about, he wrote a book about some fake stuff, and he mentioned 9/11, where people have these conspiracies about 9/11 being an inside job. That ain't no damn conspiracy. That's real. 9/11 was an inside job. I'll go to my grave. I'll say it in front of any damn body. I like to say it in front of stupid Bush's face, because he's responsible for it. That's what happened. Because listen, as a firefighter, Brother Richard, excuse me, Brother Ralph, as a firefighter, I know that those buildings could not have gone down the way they did by a plane hitting them. Because in our training, we have to train of all types of incidents, all types of fire and so forth, grass fires, tunnels, all of this stuff. We train on all of that. And even though I came on in the mid-70s, I remember seeing a video and going over practices and procedures in dealing with high-rise firefighting. I seen a video where the interstate building in Los Angeles and one in Philadelphia and so forth. Them buildings didn't fall. They were hit by a plane. They didn't fall. They sure the hell didn't fall like the World Trade Center.
Well, so you know, it is an inside job. Just like the Bay of Pigs was supposed to be an inside job. They were supposed to blow up a U.S. warship to get us involved with that.
Right.
And when I say us, you
right.
know,
I understand
our people
what you're
go
saying.
Fighting those wars too.
Exactly.
So,
I understand.
You know, yeah. So, you know, and what happened was that was Israel's way of telling this country, you better get over there and do what you got to do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody knows what it is, man.
Yeah.
And, you know, but some of our people want to believe in this place. And then to top it off, what really makes me, all the powers that be got to do is send Barack to go stroll out on the stage smiling to everybody. And, you know, and Negroes get happy about that.
Yeah.
And that's why I say it's we got too much. Man, we got a lot of problems here, brother. Just send that sellout out there and let them smile at you, and our people lose their mind.
Yep. Because we hung up, brother Ralph, off of symbolism, the idea of it, just the image of it, as opposed to substance. It was just symbolism. Man. We just like the whole idea. I just distinctively listened to a lady either on Al's show or one of the talk show, just the idea of Barack Obama being president is just so gratifying to me. I don't give a damn if nothing happens to us, and it didn't, you know, that there were some serious gains by our people made, then it didn't. But just the idea of him being in the White House, and then, of course, oh, look how cool he is. Oh, look at his wife. Look at the children. This is great. They're a perfect example of a beautiful first family, so to speak, that kind of madness. While all the while, European, Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege was being maintained. Not a damn thing
happened.
And white gays.
Don't forget about white gays. Their situation being pushed to the forefront.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, I ain't saying black gays. They just confused and they trying their best to fit in. But, you know, they trying their best to fit in. But just like here, they got a place called the Gayborhood. Some black gays is talking about racism, that, and the other. Because their whole agenda is they know for a fact our people ain't putting up with that.
Right.
They know it. So they want to cling on to that society. And some people don't want them, man.
No.
Some people don't want them.
No.
You know, and it's a shame that our brothers and sisters is trapped up in that foolishness. And under Obama, they were brainwashed to think that that's a normal life when it's not. You know, and that, man, I don't know, brother.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I know it's a lot of background noise, man. But
No, you're fine. Everything is cool. Everything is cool, brother Ralph. But I'm just saying is that he pushed those agendas, you know, and there was no benefit for us personally or as a group. None. From the LGBTQ, whatever other alphabets that you want to use, that community has issues within itself in terms of race and racism or cultural confrontation. That community has issues. So, I mean, you know, and then, of course, I don't know, these award shows, man, when you see these award shows,
they're controlled by that certain clientele. And,
in that community.
Rich white folks.
Yep.
Rich white gay folks.
Yep.
Control that whole narrative. The BET Awards, they control all, and they push it on our people.
Hey, man,
our people just seem like they don't understand that's warfare.
Yeah.
That's warfare.
Oh, definitely. That is a serious affront to the family. To the family.
Right.
You know? Yeah, because I remember watching a Tony's, maybe 20 years ago or whatever. I don't know why I'm watching the damn Tonys, but what was striking to me, that's just, I probably didn't watch it, but I probably channel surfed, came upon it, and all of these men were kissing each other. Because, you know, the Tony Awards are theater, and they dominate that. They dominate it. I mean, you know, and they dominate the industry. It's just reality. It's a sad reality. And, of course, some of us who get into it, we become like-minded, you know?
And that's the sad part,
you
know. But I'm going to leave you with this, Brother Oshie. I'm glad that Dr. Rogers is coming on Saturday. That's a good thing because, like I said, it gets me away from Negro talk because ain't nothing on terrestrial radio. I mean, nothing.
Well,
every once in a while, you'll find a host like a Darren Muhammad that might bring up issues.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, man, you know, you're not gonna. It's nothing being discussed. Even a program that I hear out of Washington, D.C. I listen to him like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. His program is even starting to be watered down and just full of nonsense. Yeah.
Well, you know, I often said that if there is another program like mine that is talking about independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people, let me know. Is there a program like that? I know there's no program like that on commercial radio.
No.
Because here in Atlanta, the black talk show is owned by Caucasians. First, it was owned by CBS. Now another Caucasian entity bought the program. So you know they ain't going to be hard-headed because what they talk about, once again, just like you said, how best we can vote and how best the system is, you know, and all this whole kind of stuff. And it is what it is, and it's going to be what it is. You know, and so then I said,
You're talking about WAOK.
There it is. That's right.
Yeah, that's garbage.
Yep, there it is.
Yes. And the one out of Chicago.
Yeah, WVON. WNOV.
The one up here, they try. They do try. They give you like 2 shows that's worth listening to. Everything else is garbage.
Yeah.
Vote Democratic Party.
Yeah.
That's what's behind everything.
Yeah.
On those stations. Vote Democratic Party.
Yep.
Don't forget the bills that's being passed and how they're screwing you over. But we just got to get Trump out of there.
Yeah.
Come on, man. I'm sick. Yeah, that's what it is. And it's just.
Yeah.
Come on, brother. But all right, I'm going to let you go, brother Oshie. Just wanted to call in and let you know I was listening.
Right on, my brother. Appreciate you, brother Ralph. Have a good day, brother.
Appreciate you, too.
All right, my
peace, peace, brother.
Peace. No, man, Ralph is on it, man. I agree. We have another caller. 646. What's up?
Okay, brother. Oh, shit. Yeah, man. Yeah.
What's up, Jay?
Ralph was talking about them coons, sambos, jigaboos, so-called radio intellectual hosts that push the Democratic Party agenda that this Negro never gets nothing out of.
Yeah.
That's the amazing thing to me, man. You know, they go on the radio talking about that Urugu Hillary Clinton, like she's the goddess of motherhood to African people.
Yeah.
And I don't know if she's ever done anything of value for African people. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Now, you know that special Puff the Magic Negro Obama, we know what he's done to African people here and abroad.
Yeah.
You know, he's done nothing but put us to sleep. You know, it's like worship.
In fact,
you know, the way these people act in regard to that magical Negro.
In fact, when he went to Africa, his whole message was, if you're not more inclusive, I may cut aid off to you. If you don't accept a homosexual agenda and allow homosexuality to happen, we'll cut aid off from you, you know?
Yeah. Yes, he did. Now, that should tell you something right there.
Yeah.
How do you put an oppressive culture on your indigenous people? How do you try to make your these people into what your filthy, stinking mother people are?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like madness. But this is what we suffer from, as you always say, cognitive dissonance.
That's right.
You understand what I'm saying?
That's right.
We are basically an insane people at times certain issues.
Oh, no, we are. Our minds have completely been distorted. Our minds have completely been whitewashed. Our thinking. We can't think outside of the imposed boundaries that Europeans have pushed on us. We can't think outside of this. That vice grip that the cracker has on our minds is tightened every damn day. It's tightened.
Yep.
And if you understand...
Yep, and it's getting tightened.
Yes, right. If you understand that tool, the only way you can release that vice grip is to turn that knob at the end of the handle. And the turning of the knob at the end of the handle is symbolic of acquiring knowledge of self. Gaining the confidence
in
yourself.
We act like we don't have no knowledge of self. No. We act like we can't function without the direction and the guidance of the Yoruba.
Yeah.
That's what upsets me the most. We can't even think and come up with visionary ideas on how we're going to move forward. It's just like with this movie. How do you allow a fictional movie to put you in such an emotional frenzy to where as you can't separate reality? You understand? It's not like you're trying to take the principles and turn it into something of African value that will separate yourself from the oppression of the Yoruba. You're not trying to do what Killmonger was talking about.
Right.
You're trying to go forward with that T'Challa nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows you what? White domination at the end. But you can't figure that out.
Right.
Because the biggest problem that we suffer from is we are not willing to kill the Yoruba. If we had the mindset to kill the Yoruba at the drop of the dime, whenever necessary, we could get out of this madness.
But see, the thing is, what is deep, though, Brother Jay, is like when you say kill the Yoruba, my mindset is kill the Yoruba mind that has been implanted in us. Purge ourselves of that mindset. Now, granted, I understand clearly that we may have to, at some point in time, have to fight physically to liberate ourselves from this madness. You know, but check this out, Jay. Check this out. With South Africa telling the Caucasians that we are going to take our land back without compensation, you took it. There was nothing. There was no discussion. There was no barter. There was no bargains. There was nothing. You just took it. So we're taking it back as a sovereign nation. Now.
Well.
Now.
Well, I'll tell you this. Before you finish, I'll tell you this. I hope they're preparing to go to war over it. I hope there are two things I want from this. I want them to prepare for war, and I want them to have the necessary people to work the land properly.
Yes.
If they do those two things,
brother,
then, you know,
that's right.
It will be done. It will be done to the point to where as the Yoruba can't come back and say what they said about Zimbabwe.
Right.
Because the truth of the matter, when Mugabe took back the land from the Yoruba in Zimbabwe, he did not have
the right
trained people
he didn't
to
have
go in and do what they were supposed to
exactly.
do to say, hey, look,
exactly.
the land is not suffering, the people are not suffering, we took back what is ours, and we're using it as an asset to move forward. That's all I'm saying.
I agree.
Now, if you don't do that in South Africa, then it's wasted. Because
exactly.
it just leads them on their thing. Because, see, the one thing about the South African boy, he has no problem killing you. He has no issue whatsoever of killing you.
No
and
doubt.
There's a lot of South Africans there who will kill you also.
Yeah. Well, look at what some of the South Africans have done in that land. Once Nelson Mandela was put in, there were some Caucasians who couldn't fathom being under the rule of Africans, and so some left. Some went back to Holland, went back to Germany, went back to Britain, maybe come here to America, whatever. But a number of them stayed, as you can see. Because when was Nelson? That's over 20-some years ago that Nelson Mandela became the president of South Africa. I remember watching a documentary of some American Africans moving to South Africa to take advantage of the homes that these Caucasians left. Gated communities, indoor pools, you name it. They was just opulence because they had the money to do so. But the real deal is that, and this should boggles everybody's damn mind. Even when Nelson Mandela was president or Zuma, whoever, that almost 80% of the best land is still in the hands of Caucasians.
Yeah.
80%.
But let's go further and be honest about this. All of the prime resources are in their hands also.
Yes.
So what's the big deal? I mean, truthfully, what's the big deal?
No.
You take the land now, but the reality is, and I don't care. If you're not going to do right by the land, it's no real reason
right.
to take the goddamn gone land.
Right.
And that's just real talk.
And that is the deal, Jay. They,
That's what should have happened in Zimbabwe, and that should and better happen in South Africa. Are we prepared at this time when we're talking about taking this land? Are we prepared to run that country? Because what you just said, Jay, is real true. The Caucasian cut a deal with Nelson Mandela.
Of course.
He said, we will get you out. You will be the president. You will be a dark face in a high place, but we are going to control the economy. And we are going to control the military. If an entity controls the economy and the military, then they're in control. I don't give a damn how many dark faces you have in high places. They are in control. See?
And has it changed?
No, it hasn't changed at all. It hasn't
now,
changed at all.
It's going to be real, real interesting.
Yes, it will be.
It's going to be real, real interesting with this whole land thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be extremely interesting because the honesty of the matter is if they could take that land and do something good with the land, then they could go after the other resource.
Yes, because that's what they need to do. That's what they need to do. The diamond industry.
Yeah.
I mean, and also, what you do, what you have here is the issue. And I want our people, and I mean these poot butt politicians to understand what we have here is an ultimate confrontation between Caucasians and us. And on the side of Caucasians are the United States, Britain, Germany, Israel against us. And what you folks going to do? Because the United States will either clandestinely or overtly support the cracker in South Africa. And some have argued that the United States will tell the South African farmers once they take your land, you can come here. Well, they're not in any danger. They're not being threatened, but they will fast track the Caucasians in South Africa if that's something that they think will do. But they will also provide them with intelligence work. They'll also provide them with weaponry. They'll also maybe a bunch of mercenaries that are American, like Blackwater, will go over there and fight Africans and to kill Africans to maintain the land. So it's going to be very interesting.
I mean, it's going to be beyond very interesting. It's going to be real because the bottom line is it's our people's land.
That's right.
It's not their land.
No.
You came there. You oppress the people. And the whole truth of the matter is South Africa is just as oppressed as it was under apartheid.
Yes.
They just don't face the brutalization that they did under apartheid, but the poverty rate and all other facets of
just
life hasn't really gotten better for the majority.
That's
for
right.
The minimals, for the ANC Negroes. Just like in America, the same type of Negro bourgeoisie that we have, the Oprahs and the rest of them, they living well, they eating well, you know what I'm saying? But on the whole, it's not like black people are doing better in this country. You have some that are still able to sustain themselves as the middle class in this country, but that's dwindling.
But see, Jay, it's like this. I threw out the number 100. Out of the number 100, 40% of our people are at or below the poverty line. I'm talking about in the United States, 40% of our people are at or below the poverty line.
No. I would honestly say at this time, what happened with the mortgage crisis and all that, home ownership, our net value, and things of that nature, I would probably say 60, truthfully.
Okay.
If truth be told, because you got to realize most people today are living way above their means, from check to check.
Okay.
There's no increase in wages or anything like
that's
that.
That's true.
There's no sustainable institutions that we have that hire ourselves and things of that nature.
Okay, so here, Jay, so here we go. Let's keep that 40. If you want to do 60, that's fine, because I'm saying it this way, Jay. 40% are at or below the poverty line. Another 40% are a paycheck to or away from joining the other 40. That's 80%. 40% are in a bad situation, the other 40 in a tenuous position. That leaves 20%. 20% of the 20%, let's do 10. 10% of the 20 are living okay. They got a nice pension. They may have a job. They may have a business. They're doing okay. They're making ends meet. They ain't really killing, but they okay. Okay? They live in subdivisions and cul-de-sacs and so forth. They're doing fine. They're sending their kids off to school. That's 10% of the 20. The other 10% of the 20 are doing exceedingly well. They're entertainers. They're sports figures. Some may be politicians, because it seems like in politics in this damn country, you go into politics to get rich because of all of the money that's out there from special interests. You go into politics to get rich, like that cracker did from one of the poor states, Arkansas or something like that. This man, I mean, he got $3 million from the National Rifle Association, some millions from this. And of course, his government salary, what does a congressperson make? About $170,000, something like that? I don't know.
Yeah.
Whatever.
$175,000.
Right. Whatever. But now he's going to be in office for a long time because of the apathy of the electorate. Because it seems like when you get elected, you could continue to get elected until you really, really, really mess up. Or if they want you out, either through gerrymandering or through putting a candidate up there in a smear campaign or whatever. But, you know, some people get elected and they stay in that position, like John Conyers and Maxine Waters. You're talking about what's his name from here in Atlanta? You know, been in there for 40-something years. You know,
you're talking about that special athlete, retarded Negro, John Lewis.
John Lewis.
That the girl looks like he's down, should you, or something like that. I can't stand that crying Negro. Anytime a man cry at the drop of the hat, you need to take your belt off and whip his ass. But listen, OG, let me say this to you. This whole thing about what you were just talking about, right? You have a situation here in America to where, as you know, you talk about this whole pension system. And with the economic strife that's going on in this country in certain states, I'm really, really seriously wondering at what point in time within, I'd say, the next 4 to 5 years, will they start attacking people's pensions?
Oh, they've done that already.
I know, but I'm saying, I know they've done it,
yeah.
But I'm saying on a state-by-state basis. Because, you know, here where I'm at, New York, they have, like, one of the best pensions ones could have, even though over the years they done changed the tiers to where now the pensions for new people coming in aren't really that good.
Right.
But the point of the matter is, they did some things in Detroit and got away with it. They did some things in Chicago and basically got away with it. I'm saying, when, because of the economics of the country, when are they going to start basically saying to all pensioners that we're going to cut around 30% of your pension check and be able to get away with it? Even though where you have some states that say you can't do it, it's against the law to do it. Because imagine the rippling effect if someone says to Brother Osi, we're going to cut 30% of your pension debt, Brother Osi.
It's going to be huge. That's huge.
But you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But this is something that we as a people really don't look at. You understand what I'm saying?
A lot of things we do, Jay, we take for granted that it'll always be there. You know?
There you go.
And there are some people who are in private. There were some people who were in private, because I was in public. Okay?
Right.
You know, but there's some people who are in private who lost everything.
Everything with that
pension. With that pension or even the investment.
9 years ago, 401k. Oh, I know a couple of Yeah. I know a couple of people that lost everything. I know a few people. Matter of fact, sad to say it, I know two people that committed suicide.
Yeah.
Because of it.
Yeah.
And it's real. Well, and it's something that we in our community and we in general never talks about it because of the simple fact it's like we live so much beyond our means. You know what I'm saying? That we get to the point to, as a people, we don't even realize that we're at a position to be homeless. We don't even take into consideration what's going on in Los Angeles, what's going on in San Francisco, what's going on in Oakland, and all of those places that are showing the type of despair and homelessness. I mean, you know, just take into consideration and visualize what they really don't show, what's going on in California with the homelessness, where there's a radius of blocks where they're talking about people are getting diseases. There's blocks where people just take a dump on the street and all of this. Do you understand the absolutely madness that's involved with that? They don't even have the decency to know that we are facing this type of problems and this type of crises, to put porta potties out there or to
right.
do something, because
right.
they think that it's going to be too much of a convenience for the people. You know, it's just going to having somebody. I mean, how deep it is out in California. Just think
it's
about
serious.
This. You got people making $45,000, $50,000 a year living in their car.
Right.
Because,
exactly. Because of the cost of living is so damn high. But you
right.
have that across this country. You have that here
yeah.
in Atlanta. You have that here. Some cities may deal with their homeless issue differently and maybe more compassionately. I don't know. But hell, there's some of them that told you, I don't want you here. I'll give you a one-way ticket to get out of here.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, they do. They do. But then where do they go? It's still the fact of the matter that you're homeless. You know
right.
what I mean? It's like, they don't even have, it's like, I'll give you a perfect example. In New York, they'll spend thousands of dollars a month to put a family in a hotel room, where they could spend that same amount of money to put them in an apartment.
Right.
Fixing
they got up an apartment.
Overload,
yeah.
they got an overload of public housing apartments empty, but they won't do the necessary
yeah.
things to fix them up and bring your families in.
You see,
I mean, it's just like, I think in all truthfulness, when you put it into its context, society is meant to have these type of situations. You ever ask yourself, where does the money come from to pay for the criminal justice system? You see what I'm saying?
Sure.
These are the type of questions that, you know, we don't discuss, we don't really think about, we don't really put it into context. How could you justify spending millions and millions and millions of dollars for hotels, but you can't spend millions and millions and millions of dollars to build and repair
right.
housing?
Because
to
see,
give
it's,
a person
because it's like this, Jay. This is capitalism.
Well,
this is capitalism. But, and in this kind of system, the whole idea is to continue to make money off of whatever and any other situation that's possible. See,
yeah, but that's not capitalism, though, when you only have a small group of people that are sharing in that type of
Jay,
maybe wealth or trend,
right, but see, that's the thing, though, Jay. You know, when you look
of,
at...
Of wealth.
But, Jay, when you look at this kind of system, the unabridged capitalistic system means that in order for me to have the whole huge amounts that I have, a whole lot of people can't have nothing. And I don't give a damn about what happens to them long
right.
as I get mine. In fact, they look at, here's my business. I made $1.3 million last year, 2017. At the end of 2018, I only made 400,000. That's 400,000 that I, you know, short. And so even though I still made 900,000 profit, but not as much profit as a year before. So I take a dip because they want you to constantly get more, 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 and more. And that's the mentality of this system. And this, I mean, Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher are two of the most despicable individuals. And they are the ones that have caused this huge disparity between management and upper management and workers. They're the ones that allowed that to happen under their watch. And of course, it has taken off and there's nothing now that can be done. Number one, even poor Caucasians don't want redistribution of wealth because poor Caucasians believe that they too can be in that upper 1% who control damn near 90% of the world's wealth.
Yeah, but that's not a practical reality or something that's really gonna happen. That's what I call a smokescreen in a joke.
Of course, Jay.
There are some that get lucky, but the majority don't.
No, Jay. This society promotes individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. And individualism, when the rich, that's how the Southern strategy worked. They spoke to the cracker individually. You may be poor, you might not be doing well, but at least you're better than a nigger.
You're right. And that's it. And they have followed suit on it to this day.
That's what I'm saying.
To the point to where as we don't even realize it on the manner in which they have been able to do it. It's like, I don't even think, honestly, Brother Oshie, that we understand the games that have been played on us in this society by this Urugu. I really believe that.
No.
I really don't think we truly understand the manner in which this Urugu has manipulated society into thinking that there's some sort of equality if you work hard. You know what I mean?
No, Jay.
I think in all truthfulness, I think it's more about you just get lucky. You know what I mean? It's sad to say it, but I think, you know, there is certain thing as hard work, but there's also a certain thing as luck.
Well, the other thing is privilege. And that's what there's privilege and in a society, and that's why I always call it for what it is. Although Brother Paul from the UK said I shouldn't use supremacy, and I agree with him. He said I should use extremism. So I call this situation for what it is: European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege, because that defines clearly what these Caucasians have done and how they have set up a system that benefits them in every area of human activity. It benefits them, you know,
and so
other Caucasians buy into it because in Caucasian society that promotes individualism, you too can be one of these rich folks as well. Because
do you think all are benefiting from it on the level that it's been set up to benefit them, or is only a few benefited from it?
Because only a few.
My own feeling is that the ignorance and the racism of the Urugu is going to do more harm to them in the long run than it will be benefiting them, because you have to have a reversal of the balance. And I think this is what Trump represents, because the things that he's doing, it's causing harm and effect not only here, but around the world.
Right.
He's making it to where as other world leaders who were supportive of America and who basically was on America's tip, is now having extreme issues with America and seeing that America is the fraud and not the leader that they claim to be. I mean, you could just look at what he just did over the last two or three days with right. this whole tariff thing.
Right.
This whole tariff thing may cause more problems than one would want to admit. I guess what he feels is that he's going to punk other nations into taking a bad position
sure.
than they should, but he doesn't realize that these nations over the years have grown and developed and are not going to allow him to punk them.
That's right.
You understand? So whereby that now makes you have to show your hand more and put you in more dangerous position, which in the process doesn't do you any good. It does harm. That's sure. why I'm quite interested to see what's going to happen with Venezuela now that they're changing over their currency, if they're going to be able to survive this transformation without, I would say, in all honesty, in all truthfulness, maybe America evading them. I could really see America evading Venezuela in the same manner in which they did to Brother Gaddafi in Libya sure. because of what Gaddafi was trying to do.
Right.
Because America has to protect their global economic interests. And Venezuela may cause more problems than good, especially if they are able to change over the currency in their country and have other nations purchase their oil with that type of currency that they are presenting to the world. It will be a serious game
sure.
changer, and
exactly.
it will cause problems. And that's something that you have to look out for with the, you know, with the breaks over there in Europe. Are they going to do business with Venezuela or anything of that nature? So, I mean, we're really at some troubling economic times that we, unfortunately, Brother Osi, are not even addressing or dealing with because of our so-called leadership is constantly begging us to be on the tip of the Democratic Party. That's why we're not advancing as a people, because our so-called leadership has no global view. They have this myopic Democratic Savior Party view that the Democratic Party agenda is what? To reclaim the white male vote. They don't. They got the Negroes in their back pockets. They already know
that's
a Negro
right.
is going to vote and act
right.
in the way of a slave. So why do I have to do anything to make
exactly.
a slave happy?
Exactly.
So
that,
Brother,
I got them. I got
it's
them.
It's an honor and a privilege to talk with you. I enjoyed Brother Ralph. And the deal is this, man. If we don't have some sort of global view on what's going on around us and with us, then we're at a loss, because you just can't put your whole worldview into the Democratic Party
right.
and what the Democratic Party gonna do for you, because the bastards ain't never done nothing
that's
for
right.
you. You know,
that's right.
they gave you a superhero, Puff the Magic Negro, Obama, and you see what he's done? Now, what is the Negro doing? He's over there in Chicago causing conflict with them people, trying to dictate to them. And the good thing is, a lot of them are waking up and they saying they're not going for that BS.
Well, also, too, you know, he's trying to find a place for his library in Chicago. And there was
well,
one neighborhood. Right. There was one neighborhood that said, no, I mean, with all due respect to you, no, because we live here. We know what's going to happen. You put your library in here, people are going to, Caucasians are going to move here, and they're going to put us out. It's the gentrification piece, you know, because the property values are going to go up. We can't afford to stay here. And now we're out.
Yeah. And he's not going to do anything to try to address and deal
no.
with that with
no.
that issue. No, no, that ain't even in the cards.
See,
baby.
See one thing, Jay. When you look at the Kerner Commission report of 50 years ago, this year, and then now you look at 1619
and now 2019, 400 years ago. The Kerner Commission said that this is two separate nations, one black, one white, separate and unequal. And it's that way today. Nothing has changed. A status quo has been maintained. And one of the buffers is the Negroocracy, the Negro peons, who have been put in place to act as, or to give an image of, see, if you work hard and you go to school, you can be like them.
Right.
And then at the same time, oh, no, nigga, you can't get too uppity. This is your place. You know?
I'll leave you with this, Brother Oshie. If we don't do something soon, get our act together, we're going to be in a world of trouble. Because the bottom line is, this thing ain't getting no better, bro.
Yeah.
This thing is not getting no better.
It's not in a direction
to where as it's about to get worse. You know what I mean? It's about to get worse. Because unfortunately, we haven't put anything in place to honestly and truthfully sustain ourselves in regards to how we're going to move forward as a people collectively. And the Yoruba knows this, and he addresses it every day, and he deals with it every day on his terms, not on your terms.
Right.
On his terms.
That's right.
He knows he can basically do whatever the hell he wants to do to us because he has that type of power and authority over us. Because we don't have nothing, honestly, as far as institutions in place to
combat
him.
Because
so
we've been...
up and have a beautiful day, brother.
All right,
and I look forward to speaking to you later on in the week.
All right, peace, Brother Jay. Peace to you. Have a blessed day, man. Peace. No, Brother Jay's on point, as always. The reality is that we are in a situation that's very tenuous. We consistently believe that this country will do what it says on paper. They had no intention. In fact, when all that paper was written, look what our condition was. And then all the amendments that have been added, nothing. They're not worth the paper. It's printed. The Emancipation Proclamation, the Constitution, all of that for African people. It means nothing. Our condition worsens. And the only thing that is going to save us is us to develop the right kind of mind, the right kind of thinking that will put us off this materialistic bull, put us off of all the bling and all this other kind of madness, and begin to prepare ourselves to run our world. To prepare ourselves to control whatever it is that we have as African people in America and anywhere in the diaspora, and more importantly, truly on the continent, because that should be our base. Because the continent of Africa has had all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and don't want to pay for. I use that Dr. John Henry Clark quote because it's real. That's what's happening there now. I saw a piece on the Congo where all these children, mining cobalt. Okay, granted, I'm speaking to you from a computer, and without it, I couldn't do it. I have a cell phone. Without it, I couldn't use it. I have a so-called smart TV. It's so much damn smart. It went out this weekend. Really wasn't out. I just didn't know how to program it because I'm not that smart. But you see what I'm saying? All of these technological advancements, there are things that make it happen. Without it, they wouldn't happen. And we have it, but yet it's exploited. You have little children. 8, 9, 10 years old. And they're carrying big bundles and bags of coltan or cobalt to be utilized in batteries, cell phones, computers, televisions, whatever. And that is us. So, our leadership or misleadership continues to beg this system for its for our inclusion. Continues to beg this system to do right, act right, be right, seeking justice. While all the numbers speak for themselves. If after 50 years our condition is no better off now than it was 50 years ago, if our condition has not improved dramatically in the 400 years of the people here to form some real equitable or some real equality, all of these things need to be dealt with and analyzed. Every one of them. We're going to have on Wednesday's program Brother Franklin Jones, the Black Matrix, or the Black People Matrix. Also, too, from across the pond, from the UK, my good brother, Brother Paul. He'll be joining us as well for a lively discussion on the issues that are affecting African people on the continent and throughout the diaspora. We'll have that conversation on Wednesday. Also, too, next week, Monday, Renoka Rashidi, my good brother and friend, Renoka Rashidi will be here. You'll be on. So, dear brothers and sisters, we leave you with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. Brothers and sisters, Shem Hotep, go in peace. Asante Sana. Thank you. Peace, family.